Bibles with you this morning, let's turn to Judges chapter number 16. Judges chapter number 16. Been really blessed by the music this morning. Brother Sean, you make that look so easy over there on the bass. Just one time, I'd like to be able to do all that you were doing with your fingers. I bet you can type 500 words a minute on a computer as well, huh? Judges chapter number 16, going to be in the fifth part of our series, Samson and the Price of a Bad Haircut. This morning, I want to speak specifically about the subject matter of guarding the heart, guarding the heart. Judges chapter number 16, we're going to look at verses 7 down to verse number 22, so we're going to have to go really fast this morning. You listen fast, I'll preach fast, and we'll be done as fast as we can, all right? When we left off in Judges chapter number 16 last week in verse number 6, Delilah had asked Samson to tell her where the source of his great strength was, and you and I kind of left off with the belief that something bad was about to happen. Delilah was basically saying to Samson, I want to know who you are, and I need you to tell me exactly how you're so strong, because these Philistines, we've been unable to defeat you, and here I am, I'm with you now, and I'm a Philistine, and why don't you just tell me where your strength lies? And what's interesting is that she wasn't even deceptive about her plan. She turns to Samson, she says, please tell me where your great strength lies, and listen to this, and how you might be bound that one could subdue you. You know, when we left off last week, what we saw was that the only person who was being deceived in the things that were about to take place was Samson. Nobody else was being deceptive at all. The Philistines had made their plans clear, and Delilah was now making her plans clear. The only person who was being deceived was Samson himself, and the reason that he was being deceived was because he was deceiving himself. He wasn't seeing reality for what it was. When he looked around, he didn't notice what everybody else could have seen, and while the rest of us could see the situation unfolding and all the bad that was about to take place, while the rest of us could see that as neon signs saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, Samson had deceived himself to a point that he was about to open up to a woman who was only meaning harm in his life. Bad things were about to happen, and this morning what I want to do is I want to march through our story or the rest of the episode between Samson and Delilah, and I want you to see this roller coaster of events that takes place. Delilah has requested of Samson that he tell her where his great strength lies. And in that moment, Samson had three options, I think. The first option was that he could have turned tail and run. He could have thought to himself, you know, if she's telling me that she wants to know where my strength lies so she could subdue me and bind me, well, you know, that's not a good sign. You know, I think maybe it's time that instead of waiting like I have in the past, whether it was at Gaza or whether it was in Timnah, instead of waiting like I did in the past, I better just go ahead and get out of here as quick as I can. The second option he had was he could have said, you know what? I see the handwriting on the wall, and I'm going to stay right here, and I'm going to destroy the Philistines just as God has required me to do. I'm going to use this opportunity. I may have been foolish to get here, but now that I'm here, I'm going to use this opportunity for the glory of God. The third option he has in this moment is to play along in the game, to decide that he's going to go ahead and continue to toy with Delilah and the Philistines and just kind of see what happens. Well, unfortunately for Samson, and you already know his story, he decided to choose the latter. He responds to her in verse number 7 upon her request of knowing where his great strength lies. He says to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak like any other man. His answer was interesting because commentators tell us that, first of all, bowstrings were made of animal guts. Now, that's disgusting, right? But they made these bowstrings out of animal guts, and actually strength came in drying them out. And so when you would take these animal guts and weave them together, after they dried out, they would become quite strong, and they wouldn't be easily broken. And yet Samson looks at Delilah and he says, you know what you need to do? You need to bring me these bowstrings and have them not dried out, but have them still moist and soft and tender. And it's kind of like he's playing a game with her. He's looking at Delilah and it's kind of like he's saying, you know, I know you're not all that smart. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to test just to see how smart you were. See, Samson's response was telling, and it seems that he had contempt in this moment for the request itself, for Delilah and the Philistines, and he's assuming that they're pretty dumb and that they're never going to figure out what he's doing. He's figuring that he's a whole lot smarter than they are. It's kind of like a young man looking at a young lady and saying, you know, we need to stop at O'Reilly's to get some turn signal fluid, right? Any young ladies had that trick pulled on you? Okay, you don't have to raise your hands. God bless you. It's kind of like Samson saying, you're not very smart, are you? You're not going to figure this out. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to bring to me these bowstrings, these animal guts that are still wet and moist, And I know it seems strange, but those things, that method right there, it'll make me like any other man and weak. See, Samson wasn't giving Delilah any credit at all. He figured that she was all beauty and no brains. So what he told her couldn't possibly hurt him or her, and so he gives her this riddle. But it's also a telling response, I think, because it speaks about Samson's mindset in this moment. Samson was in this moment saying, you know, nobody's going to pull one over on me. I'm the one who's smarter than everybody else. I'm the one who's stronger than everybody else, and nobody is going to be able to figure out how to overcome me. I alone know the strength, and I alone know my power and how it might be bound. Well, in verse number 8, she had the Philistine lords bring up the bowstrings, just like he had said. And while he slept, she tied him up and she bound them with him. And in verse number 9, she shouts out, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. He immediately wakes up and he snaps the bowstrings. And with little effort, their best laid plans are gone awry. Verse number 10, Delilah says to Samson, behold, you have mocked me and you've told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. Now think about that for a moment. The last time this happened, just a few short verses ago, Samson woke up to a bunch of lords of the Philistines ready to kill him, right? An ambush was set. And you would think in this moment, you'd say, Samson, you know, the last time this happened, you almost lost your life. You think that maybe in this moment he might consider maybe giving her a different answer or maybe saying, you know what, I know, I'm on to you now. You're trying to trick me into having me killed. But verse number 11 says, Samson responded to her, if they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Well, now that seems reasonable, right? I mean, after all, the ropes that have already been used, they're probably a little bit more brittle. Maybe they've been dried out by the sun. Maybe they've been stretched out. But new ropes, they'll surely be strong enough. Now, the irony of Samson's answer in this particular section is back in chapter number 15, verse number 13. You recall that when the Philistines sent the men of Judah down to arrest Samson, you know what they did? They brought two new ropes, the Bible says. It says that the men of Judah came and bound him with two new ropes. And so if the Philistines knew their history, they would have known that Samson was still playing another game with them because he's already showed that new ropes have no power and no strength over him. But Delilah, she decides to play the game. She binds him with the new ropes and says to him in verse number 12, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But once again, he wakes up, he snaps the ropes, and all their plans go awry. Now, you would think after this has happened twice, no way this could ever happen again, right? I mean, fool me once, shame on you, right? And fool me twice, I don't know how the rest of the phrase goes. But I know that after a while, you're supposed to start picking up on what's going on around you. You'd think after the first time, maybe Samson thought, you know, Delilah, she didn't know these Philistines were coming, right? She may have been just trying to play a little game with me and just caught me at a bad moment, and the Philistines showed up. But then after it happens a second time, I'm thinking it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out this woman has no good intentions. But verse number 13 says, then Delilah said to Samson, until now, you have mocked me and you've told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound. Don't do it, Samson. Don't do it. She wants another answer, right? What's he do to her? He says to her this time, if you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and I will be like any other man. Now, did you notice something happened this time around? The first time he played a game with her, he said, you know, you should take bowstrings that are not dried out yet and bring them up, and they'll bind me. They'll make me weak like any other man. Then he told her, you should get new ropes, and you should use them, you can bind me with those, and that'll make me like any other man. But this time, Samson looked at Delilah, and he gave her a little bit of a hint. He said, you know, if you'll mess around with my hair, if you'll take my hair and you'll weave it into a web and then you'll fasten it with a tight pin, well, now then I will become weak like any other man. There's a transition taking place. You see, before Samson was just toying with Delilah, and he didn't even give her the slightest hint of what was going on and where the true source of his strength was. But now this time, Samson actually gives her a little bit of a hint. You see, Samson didn't think that there was any way that Delilah would ever figure it out. She hadn't figured it out the first two times, so how would she figure it out the third? Even though twice before she had tried to lead him into a trap, into an ambush, he still assumes that he was much stronger, much wiser, and much more cunning than she could ever be. And like before, she weaves his hair together and she fastens it with a pin, and she yells out, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And like before, he escapes their trap. Now, we kind of got to stop here for a moment. It's kind of incredible when you think about it. The irony of the moment is that Samson thinks the Philistines are so dumb because they are believing all of the lies that he's offering to them. He looks at these Philistines and he says, man, these guys are just nothing more than a bunch of country bumpkins, right? They'll never in the world figure out how to subdue me and to bind me. They're just a bunch of dumb rednecks, right? But in reality, as you read the story, you and I, we look at it and we say, who's the real dumb one here? I mean, how many times, how many different traps do you have to have walked into before you realize what's going on around you? But you see, this is the problem with sin, beloved. Everyone around you may see the pitfalls and may see what sin is doing to your life, but the participant himself often is blinded to its effects. You see, that's why Samson's a great picture of what sin does in a life. While every one of us can read Samson's story and say, Samson, how could you be so dumb? How could you be so naive? The reality is that Samson's story is our story. When we get involved in sin, sin begins to destroy us. It begins to take away our joy. It begins to take away our happiness. It wants to bind us. It wants to leave devastation in its wake. And all of a sudden, the marks of sin begin to bear out on our body, bear out on our souls, bear out on our attitudes. But we don't see them. We're blinded to them. Whatever the reason may be, for Samson, he was in love with this woman. He looked at Delilah, and he saw the apple of his eye. And so because of that, he was blinded to everything else that was going on. For us, there may be other things, but sin is always so blinding because we want it to be. That's the reason it's blinding. The only reason Samson allowed all of this to continue is because he wanted it to continue. At any moment, Samson could have decided, you know, this isn't working out for me. But you see, Samson was so full of himself, and he believed himself to be invincible. And so every time he got out of the trap, he was just being set up for what was going to happen in the future. Every time he got away, and every time things worked out on his behalf, he just thought to himself, you know, I really am invincible. They'll never be able to touch me. But there's an old saying, you can only play with fire so long before you get burned. And Samson was about to get burned. You see, in Delilah's fourth request, we find out what was really going on. In verse number 15, she turns to him, and this is the bulk of our message this morning. And she said to him, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? She says to him, you have mocked me these three times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies. Samson had become quite a playboy. In a phrase, Samson was girl crazy. Women held an intoxicating spell over Samson. He'd been telling Delilah, apparently, that he loved her. That's why she says to him, you say that you love me, but your heart's far from me. But you see, Samson, he didn't know anything about what real love was. Even though he had said the words, I'm certain that Samson really couldn't tell us today, couldn't give us a lesson on what real love was supposed to be and what it was supposed to look like. He'd fallen in love with a woman at Timnah, and it almost destroyed him. Shortly after her death, then he fell in love with a working woman down in Gaza, and that almost destroyed him. Now he was in love with Delilah, and she was in the process of destroying him. Samson had no concept of what real love really was all about. And when you think about it, Delilah's question is a legitimate question. She looks at Samson, and she says, how can you love me, but not possibly be willing to show me your heart? How can you be willing to say that you love me but not show me who you really are? You see, that's what she's wanting from Samson in this moment. When she's asking Samson to bear out his heart, she's saying to him, I want to know the essence of who you are. I want to know everything about you. You see, the heart is the seat of passion in an individual. It's the place of their being. It's the very core and the individualism of the person in the Old Testament. So she's telling Samson in this moment, if you really love me, you're going to tell me who you are. You're going to let me into your life. You're going to let me really see who you are. Like Joe Black says it, loving is, you know, knowing the best and the worst about a person and still choosing to be with them. Delilah was saying to Samson in this moment, Samson, you tell me that you love me, but you're not willing to let me in. You're not willing to tell me everything about yourself. You're not willing to show me your essence. And you know, beloved, that's true. You see, in love, there's no secrets. There's no hidden matters. Paul defines love in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 when he says that love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing. But listen to this. Instead, it rejoices at the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And so Delilah was saying to Samson, Samson, if you really do love me, you'll let me in. You'll really let me see who you are and let me see the essence of your existence. And she was right. If Samson really did love her, he needed to tell her who he was to give her a glimpse into his person. But you see, that's where the problem was, wasn't it? Samson shouldn't have loved this woman. I know you can't help who you're attracted to and so on and so forth, and I've heard all of the lines and the excuses. But you see, here's the problem. Love, beloved, is a choice. Love is a choice to act upon, a choice about who you choose to reveal and how deep you choose to go with an individual. I've used this example before. I know this isn't popular. In our culture, love is supposed to be all about those warm, ooey-gooey feelings that you get down deep inside, right? But think about this. If that's how we define love, then John chapter 3:16, or verse number 16 says, "For God so had an ooey-gooey, deep-down loving feeling for the world that he gave his only begotten son," right? But on the other hand, if love is more of a choice, and it's a choice to be committed, to be faithful to an individual, then what John chapter 3, verse 16 says, "For God was so committed to the world that he gave his only begotten son that whoever should believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Love, beloved, is a choice. It's a choice about who you let into your life. It's a choice, and don't get me wrong, I want those ooey-gooey warm feelings, and we want all of those things. We want the butterflies in the heart, but listen, love is a choice that you say, "I'm going to be faithfully committed. I'm going to let you into my life, and I'm going to be in your life, and you can trust me with who you are, and I'm going to trust you with who I am, and we're not going to harm that. We're not going to damage that." Samson didn't understand any of these things, and he should never have loved this woman. He may have been attracted to her, but he should have never loved her. He should have never allowed her into his life, and he should have never allowed her into his. Samson had a chance to end this thing. When she tricked him the first time, he should have seen Delilah for who she was. He should have thought in that moment, you know, this woman's not worth my trust. She's not worth me giving my heart to, my essence to. When she tricked him the second time, he should have said, you know, she might have gotten me twice, but she's really not worth my trust. And then when she tricked him a third time, he should have said, wow, it doesn't take a very smart person to figure it out. This person is not worthy of being my other person, my soulmate. They're not worthy of having my heart, my essence, because all they ever do is trample upon it. In truth, Samson should have never gone down there in the first place. So many times I think we get caught up in the different tricks that Delilah does. But you know, if Samson had never gone down to the Valley of Sorek, he would have never found Delilah beautiful in the first place. If Samson had never gone down there and laid eyes upon her, gone down to that Philistine place, he would have never had a chance to fall in love with her. But you see, Samson, he had a problem in his life. He just kept putting himself in positions to fail. And as he did it, he put himself in a place where he was going to have devastation in the wake. Samson, you see, is a lesson to all of us on the importance of guarding our hearts. You see, beloved, when you put yourself in a position to allow your heart to be open, you better be sure that that person that you're opening up to is worthy of that trust. You know, the heart is the most valuable thing that you have. I don't want to be all sentimental this morning, but it just is what it is. Your heart, beloved, is the most valuable thing that you have to offer to another individual. Every time that you offer it out and it's damaged, a scar is formed. It may recover, but a callus is formed and developed, and it will never be the same heart as it once was. Who you choose to entrust your heart with has the potential to either make your heart grow softer or more calloused and more hard over time. But you know, it always amazes me at how easy it is for many of us in our culture to just give our hearts away, to show people the essence of who we are without ever even giving it a second thought. I mean, think about what Samson was getting for what he was offering his heart for. He wasn't getting anything but death, turmoil, and destruction. That's what he was getting for the price of his heart. Teenagers, let me speak to you just ever so briefly this morning. If I was going to teach a lesson about purity, I wouldn't go to the same places that oftentimes other pastors go to. You know, I'm not saying that the scriptures aren't there, and certainly they are, but if I was going to teach a lesson about purity, I'd always start with the heart. You see, Samson, he had all the evidence in the world that Delilah wasn't to be trusted with his heart, but he was still tempted to give it to her anyway. And the reason was because he was willing to make compromises. And the compromise he was about to make, I guarantee you, he would have never thought was possible. I think if you had asked Samson a day earlier, before he told Delilah about how if she would shave his head, it would take away his strength. I think if you told him he was going to say that a day earlier, he would have said, there's no way in the world that will ever happen. But you see, the reason that he did it was because he didn't protect his heart leading up to that moment. He left it out on the block to be bought for whatever she was willing to offer. Whatever she was willing to give him for his heart, he was willing to take it. And you know, beloved teenagers, you will compromise on your principles as well. When you let somebody else in, when you let somebody in and you let them see who you are and all that you are, your essence, without first making them earn that essence, without first making them see that they are worthy of that trust, that they are worthy of you showing them such a beautiful and valuable thing. See, sometimes you're like Samson, you're just blind to them. In that case, you should have those friends in your life that help you see reality for what it is. You should have those other folks in your life who are willing to say, you know, you need to stop and think about this for a moment. Look at what that person is doing to you, and look at how they've treated your heart to this point. Before you give them anything else, you better make sure that they're worthy of that heart, of that trust. It's a difficult conundrum, not only for teenagers, beloved, because, you see, we live in a society that wants us to be transparent, that wants us to be honest, and wants us to lay everything out. We live in a society that is so fake, and we hate it. And because the world is so fake, we don't want to be that way, and we want others not to be that way. And so we're constantly telling people, just be more transparent, be more honest, put everything on the line, show us who you are, leave no secrets. I was at a children's camp not long ago, just a couple of years ago, And there was something that a speaker said there that just really ate up on me on the inside. It really destroyed me. And in fact, it even caused some turmoil in the lives of a couple of our families. What the children's speaker did was he got up there, and remember that this is kindergartners up to like third grade. These are young kids. And they get up there and they're speaking, and they've really made the week an emotional mess, right? And it's gotten more and more emotional every night. And he gets to the last night and he says, here's what I want you to do, children. Go home and tell, or go back to your dorms and tell the counselor your deepest, darkest secret. Listen, what they did in that moment was they set these children up for a lifelong struggle. They were telling these children, go back, and I don't care how well you know this counselor and how well you think you can trust him, just pour everything out on the line. Put everything that there is about you out there so everybody can see it. That is a dangerous thing to do. And I know this isn't popular. In our culture, we say, oh, let's not have secrets. Everybody's friends. Just bear it all out. Be transparent. Let everybody see everything. But you see, beloved, that's not biblical at all. It's not scriptural. And the reason Samson was in this mess was because he did not make Delilah first earn that trust. He did not make Delilah first show, prove that she was worthy of him bearing his heart. See, God didn't make our hearts that way. God made the heart to be given as a special gift to just a select few. There are things that only your spouse should know about you this morning, beloved. It's not about being deceptive, it's about being protective. There are things that only your closest friends should know about you. You know, nobody has 475 friends. That's just Facebook, all right? There's just a few people in your life that should really know things, everything about you. That's not about being deceptive, it's about being protective. Let me give it to you like this. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, keep your heart with all vigilance. Do you hear that? Keep your heart. That word there in the Hebrew also means to guard. Guard your heart with all vigilance. That means you're going to have to work at it. Guard your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. It's the essence of who you are, the wisdom writer says. So you better protect it, guard it. Proverbs 12, verse 23 says, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaim folly. Proverbs chapter 20, verse number 5, the purposes in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. In other words, the heart is a deep thing, and a man of understanding knows when to go to that well and to pull it out and when to leave it alone. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 19, "Hear, my son, and be wise, and direct your heart in the way." Always, 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 the wisdom writer begs us to protect our hearts and to know how to use them. You see, Delilah wanted Samson to tell her who he was, to tell her the essence of his being. And in verse number 16, it says, "And when she pressed him hard and with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death." Verse number 17, "And he told her all that was in his heart." There it was. In a single moment, all the barriers which had been created, they were gone. He had poured himself out. He had given her his essence. For the first time in Samson's life, he was vulnerable. You know, nobody could ever touch Samson up until this moment. This story could still have a happy ending, couldn't it? Even after Samson told Delilah what was going on in his heart, you know, Samson could have just gotten up and left. Because, you know, even though everybody knew his secret now, or at least Delilah knew his secret, you got to find somebody else who's strong enough to bind him, right? Somebody else who's strong enough to hold him down while somebody else cuts his hair. But listen to what happens in verse 18 down to verse 19. "When Delilah saw that he had told her all of his heart, she sent and she called the lords of the Philistines, saying, 'Come up again, for he has told me all his heart.' Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her, and they brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees." I want you to underline that. That's an interesting phrase. "She made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head." And listen to this. "And then she began to torment him, and his strength left him." He laid his head right there on her knees. He put his head out there like it was on a chopping block because he just didn't get it. You know, beloved, if Samson really was in love with Delilah, then he did what love requires, that you pour it out. The problem was that he should have never been in love with her in the first place. You see, this wasn't going to end well. In verses 20 down to verse number 21, it says, "And she said, 'The Philistines are upon you, Samson.' And he awoke from his sleep and said, 'I will go out as at other times and shake myself free.'" And here come some of the saddest words in all of Scripture. "But he did not know the Lord had left him. And the Philistines seized him, and they gouged out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza, and they bound him with bronze shackles, and he ground at the mill in the prison." Some pretty sad lines. "But he did not know the Lord had left him." Some have asked me, more than one person has asked me, why it was that it took all of this for God to leave Samson. I mean, if you follow the story, you know, in chapter 14, 15, and now in chapter 16, Samson has made a lot of compromises along the way. And why was it that it took this shaving of his head? Why was it that it took that for God to finally leave Samson and not to deliver him? Well, I don't know that I have a perfect answer this morning, but let me give you my best shot. You see, up until this moment, there was always a line that Samson wouldn't cross. Now, it wasn't a very good line, but there was a line that he wouldn't cross. It was almost as though he'd drawn a line in the sand and say, "I will do everything up until this point, but when I get to this point, I'm going to stop and I'm not going to cross that line." What was that line? It was the line of telling people about his hair. He didn't mind if he compromised on the drinking. He didn't mind if he compromised on the dealing with dead bodies. He didn't mind if he compromised with women that he was not supposed to have any dealings with. But when it came to this line, there was this line set in the sand, and Samson had said, "I'm not going to go there." I think if you think that the story, however, is all about the hair, you've missed it. The line could have been at any point. I think the hair was merely symptomatic of a larger issue, and that is what we've been speaking about, Samson's heart. You see, I believe that the reason that this was the straw that broke the camel's back was because in this moment, Samson gave his heart to the enemy. You see, God had established a line for the Philistines, and God had established a line for Samson. God had established that the Philistines were the enemy, and Samson was supposed to be the deliverer, and there was this line established, do not cross that line. And in this moment, more than the hair falling off his head, was the fact that Samson decided to give his heart to the enemy and to bear his soul to them. See, beloved, Samson stands to us in this moment as a warning about who we decide to hitch our wagons to. All the evidence was there. Samson didn't want to see it. It's frustrating to watch people give their hearts, young or old, to people who don't care for them, people who want to just destroy them. Sure, they say the right things and they try to convince you, but if you would just take a few moments and step back and strip away the emotion, look at the situation for what it is, you would save yourself a world of trouble. But we don't do it. Like Samson, so oftentimes we just keep going back and back again and back again because we're blinded and we choose to be blinded. Samson lost his hair, lost his strength, and lost the Lord's Spirit because he chose to welcome into his heart, to bring into his inner circle an individual who was a wolf in sheep's clothing. He chose to bring into his inner circle, to open up his heart to the enemy that God had declared as such. See, the damage that was done went far beyond the physical. Samson would be sent to a mine. His eyes were going to be gouged out, and his hands and his feet were bound. But don't you think as Samson sat there working in the mill, the emotional toil, the taxation that vexed his soul from day to day was far worse? I like how Brother Eddie always clarifies this. He says that this is the blinding, binding, grinding road of sin. All of a sudden, Samson's lost everything. And I'm sure that his soul was vexed far more than his body ever was. See, beloved, the lesson here today is that we gotta be careful who we let in. You see, not everyone is worthy of having your heart. Young ladies, young men, save some for your spouse. That's my challenge to you this morning. That young man, that young lady, you may marry them someday. You might marry them someday. But don't just save yourself physically. Save yourself in your essence, emotionally and spiritually. Save who you are for your spouse. You'll have plenty of time to reveal everything. You know, you don't have to do everything now. I'm convinced that so many young people make the physical decisions that they do because they first were in an emotional compromising setting. They spent hours on the phone late at night and they say, I feel like I've known that person my entire life. Duh, you've been going to school with them since you were 5 years old. You have known them your entire life. Listen, when an emotional relationship goes too deep at such a rapid speed, there is no place for that relationship to go except to a physical place, which you should have set up boundaries and careful marks to make sure you didn't go there. See, beloved, have secrets for Pete's sake. Young people, have some secrets. I tell Kelly all the time that I could never leave her because I'll spend the rest of my life just getting to know her other personalities. Just teasing. There are some things about you that you don't have to reveal all at once. There are some things about you that nobody else needs to know except your spouse, whether it be present or in the future. You don't have to let everybody in. And let me just give you this warning, young people. If you have somebody who demands that you let everything out there, then they're probably more like a Delilah than they are the right person you're supposed to marry. I know this is very contrary to the social message, but don't make the mistake that Samson made this morning. Maybe this morning you say, well, what do you do if you feel like you've already messed up? Somewhere along the way, young, old alike, you feel like you've let your heart out there to places, to things that you weren't supposed to do it, and a lot of damage has been done. Devastation has been left in the wake. Well, without going into next week's finale, let me show you one little verse. Verse number 22 says, but the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. You know, the thing is, beloved, I can tell you this morning, God's not done just yet. He wasn't done with Samson, and he's not done with you. Just because you feel like you've compromised, just because you feel like you've made mistakes and you've put your heart out there and it's come back to you cold and calloused, I want you to know that God's not done with you just yet. Just because you feel like you've destroyed your life and you've made a lot of bad decisions along the way, because you made compromises and you turned into a person that you never thought that you would be and you never intended to be, let me tell you, God's not done with you just yet. As long as there's still a little bit of air in your lungs, God's still got a purpose and a plan. God wasn't done with Samson, and he's not done with you. And I pray this morning that you'll hang on to that hope and come back next week and let's see what God can do. Stand with me reverently and let's pray. Father, thank you for this morning, for the opportunity you've given us to gather in this place and to study your word and to just learn a lesson about guarding our hearts, protecting ourselves from the damage that is done when we bare our souls, when we bare our essence to the people who have not yet earned that trust, earned that essence to be revealed to. My heart goes out to the young folks, certainly, not only in the congregation at the moment, but those who will be coming in, because I think there's such a great temptation for them to go to such emotional depths in their relationships at such a young age that the only outcome, the only place that that road leads to is physical compromises as well. So this morning, I pray that you convict their hearts and show them that there really is a biblical admonition to have some secrets, to only let a few select people in, to save some for who their spouse might be in the future. Father, I pray that you'd convict us about that, convict them about that, that they put up some barriers, some protection, that they'd see reality for what it is. Father, I pray for others, adults in this congregation who have let their heart out there. They've loaned it out to the wrong people over the years, maybe not even to people. They've loaned their heart out to the wrong things. They began to desire things that they shouldn't desire, and so they let their heart out there. And it returned back to them cold and callous. They made decisions along the way that weren't of you, and they left devastation in the wake of those decisions. I pray this morning that you would revive our hearts with the hope that you're still God. We're still here, and you're not done just yet. That you'd make us new people. And that just as you were not done with Samson, you're not done with us. Do business with your people in this place this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's sing a song of invitation and you respond as the Lord leads.
'Cause you are good, you are good. When there's nothing good in me, you are love, you are love. On display for all to see. You are light, you are light. When the darkness closes in, you are hope, you are hope. You have covered all my sin. You are peace, you are peace. When my fear is crippling, you are true, oh so true. Even in my wandering, you are joy. You are joy, you're the reason that I sing. You are life, you are life. In you death has lost its sting. And oh, I'm running to your arms. I'm running to your arms. The riches of your love will always be enough. Nothing compares to your embrace. Light of the world forever. I'm running to your arms, I'm running to your arms. The riches of your love will always be enough. Nothing compares to your embrace. Light of the world forever reign. I'm running to your arms, I'm running to your arms. The riches of your love will always be enough. Nothing compares to your embrace. Light of the world forever. Jesus, my heart will sing. No other name, Jesus, Jesus. And oh, I'm running to your arms, I'm running to your arms. The riches of your love will always be enough. Nothing compares to your embrace. Light of the world forever.
Thank you guys for your attendance this morning, your faithfulness. Just be seated for one moment. What a great crowd. It's good to see all of you this morning. And let me encourage you as the summer goes along. I know that there's lots of activities, but continue to be faithful to the Lord and to his house. And listen, there's no better place to be, even in the summer, than God's house with God's people. And I believe that God still wants to work, even though everybody else is on summer vacation, right? And I know it's a busy summer, and be involved where you can be, and I believe you'll be blessed for it. A couple of announcements that are in the bulletin that I want to just take a moment to draw your attention to. First of all, today, it should say tonight that there is Awanas here at the church from 5 to 6:30, the normal Awanas time, and that